Hello, friends, and welcome to the most glorious of events, the Movie Mavericks Podcast. This outstanding program is hosted by two fine gentlemen, Jason and Trevor. Now make it so.
MovieMavericks.com. Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 336 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson, sending you over to Jason Rugard. He is the spy who dumped me, and he's got a rundown for us.
On tonight's episode, we will be discussing reviews for A Quiet Place, Tully, and The Week Of, as well as our thoughts on the trailer for A Spy Who Dumped Me, Meg, Future World, and The Equalizer. Our first film, though, is A Quiet Place, and it's a huge box office hit. Is it any good? I think it's a pretty good movie. I don't think it's excellent or revolutionary in the, you know, revolutionizing the genre or using the genre to great effect like last year's Get Out or even Split. But I do think it's a pretty solid genre piece. I think it's a little overhyped at this point, but John Krasinski is extremely well cast in this. He wrote and directed this film. He has some co-writers on this. But this is a very small, kind of independent feeling film. With a big budget, $17 million I think they made this with. And in the indie film world, that's a big budget. And this kind of feels like an indie film. I don't understand why it's caught on the way it has. You saw it. What did you think? Do you understand why it's become such a big hit?
No, but then again, I don't really understand why a lot of things become hits these days. I felt the same about a lot of films that have come out that have been successful by word of mouth, I guess. They weren't so obvious. And this is one of those where it's just, it's a good movie. There's a lot of plot holes and just a lot of holes in general to the idea and it's certainly the execution of the entire thing. You know, it has to be quiet. You have these monsters that hear anything. They come, they eat stuff. Well, everything would be eaten after a while, right? I don't even know how these people would survive, let alone how neat the movie is with the idea that the daughter's deaf, and so then these people know how to do sign language and all that, which really wouldn't help them survive, because any little noise and they're dead. So it really doesn't matter that they're, I guess, used to being quiet, right?
The film played a little loosey-goosey, too, with what pitch and volume they could hear at. At times, certain noises were elevated over others. Creatures, were they, if they were in the area, was
how
that
does
one?
It know? Does it know it's an animal or something making the noise and not something else? You know, there's lots of noises that just happen, right? The wind blows, this happens there. Does it just know? Because it seemed, as you're saying, you know, even a little, a branch breaking would, they'd all come all of a sudden.
Yeah, they seemed a little selective. And I didn't particularly feel like the rules were established all that well and then adhered to, which is where I fault the film for a bit. But it did have a great use of sound design, a fairly clever idea for a film, and it's not something that we had seen before. I like the fact that horror movies, quote-unquote horror movies, which is what this is being lumped into, even though it's more of a thriller, I like that these movies are having a resurgence at the box office. And it's not being done in a sleazy way and like the torture porn era that we lived through with all the Saws and Hostel and all that kind of stuff, but in an intellectual way, in that these are kind of elevated horror films. Get Out,
yeah, and they certainly have a certain cinematic quality to them. You know, these are definitely directed, which is more than I can say for a lot of horror movies, which are just kind of, as you say, do they just exist to throw some gore up on the screen? At least, yeah, this is tries to create a scene and then execute something that causes tension within that scene. You know, instead of just showing you monsters ripping things apart, there's certainly a buildup and an idea of what's at stake. Of course, it's obviously the ultimate thing, their lives, right? If they make a noise, they're dead. But I don't know. With movies like this, you always run the risk of kind of reducing the danger, because these people have to survive for so long. By the time you get to the end of the movie, they've been within inches of these monsters for like several times and have escaped without being even hurt at all. It's not as scary at the end of the movie, right?
It's less impactful. Yeah, I get you. I know what you mean. And this movie has an ending that is, I don't think, particularly well earned.
I don't like the twist in this for how they kill the monsters, I think is ridiculous and doesn't make a lot of sense.
However, it's not a bad movie, and it's actually a pretty good movie. It's just not a great film. So I give it a recommendation. I think you do too, with some reservation. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, this was both good to see in a theater, because it's really cool to see very quiet movies in a theater, because there's such a big space to fill up with no sound. Mm-hmm. So it works there, and it would work equally as well, I would bet, on home video, you know, or at home. I guess not home video, but...
Streaming, I love you said that. Right? It made me feel good. I rented a Redbox the other night, and I kept it over time because that's what you do when you rent a Redbox. That's why I shouldn't rent them anymore. And I was like, I gotta go to the store and return this. And it felt good to have to go return a tape, you know, or a video. I felt like it was American Psycho. I gotta return a tape. Let's move on. What's the next movie here?
Next up, we have Tully.
You seem like a great mom. Great moms organize class parties and casino night. They bake cupcakes that look like minions. All the things I'm just too tired to do. Honestly, even getting dressed just feels exhausting. I open my closet and I just think, didn't I just do this?
Yeah, but that's the downside of living on a planet with a short solar day. Although Jupiter's even shorter.
You're like a book of fun facts for unpopular fourth graders.
All right, this is Jason Reitman's new film written by Diablo Cody, pairing up again with Charlize Theron. Here you have Mackenzie Davis, Mark Duplass, Ron Livingston, rounding out the cast. And this is really just a movie about a mother who gets a nanny, and then shenanigans ensue, and there's a ridiculous plot twist at the end. Am I wrong?
You are wrong. You are wrong. You know, we saw this at an early advanced screening with 1,500 people in a Q&A with Charlize Theron, in full disclosure, and the audience that we saw it with, which admittedly was primed for the movie, ate up every ounce of this movie. Whether that was genuine or not, I can't tell.
No, it's not.
I kind of came out of it cynical, and I agreed with you in a lot of things, but it's grown on me. And as much as that plot point, that ridiculous plot point that you called it, could be viewed like that and isn't earned, it has some relevance and makes this movie, at least I thought this was just some little, like you said, some little shenanigan thing happening, but at least the plot point had something else going on. There was a higher level of thinking going
but
on.
I disagree with that, because I think that you could have made a better movie regardless of that. You know, I'm not going to fall back on one thing that made the film somewhat interesting to say that it's a decent movie, right? That, as you say, unearned is exactly what this plot point is. And they admitted so much. We heard Reitman himself say it, that they attempted to not earn it, right? They really didn't really want you to see it coming at all. So the hints and all the nonsense that he says is in the film, which I guess we'd have to go back and look to be sure, but he couldn't pick up on it. They made no attempt to lay this out in any way, in any meaningful way, certainly throughout the first three quarters of the film, to have any real impact at the end for the message and for the meaning and what they were trying to say.
I thought that the movie at least stuck with me because of that weird twist. And
but that's not a good thing.
I didn't. Well, first of all, that's did you just, see it coming at all?
No, not at all. Because yeah, I was totally – well, when you see the trailer, everything that's set up here, well, even the first half of – you know, the first and second act of this film are not set up for this, really. You know, it's in there, but it's just not – and it's not the same thing as like Fight Club or any other movie with a weird twisty ending, which gives you that feeling that, okay, something's not quite right. I am watching something very weird here. And it kind of sets you up for it. This movie doesn't do that. And I don't know. There are a lot of, because of that, there are a lot of things that happen that you don't understand when they happen, what the significance of it is. And it just kind of makes her character seem weak and stupid. And I don't know, that the Tully character here, played by Mackenzie Davis, which is the nanny, as well, just doesn't seem grounded at all, which makes sense when you see the end of the film. But I mean, what's the point of the first half of this movie? I mean, what do you get out of it? You get nothing.
This movie is, you know, and I'm giving this a recommendation with strong reservations, but It's overwritten and underwritten at the same time, in that it's overwritten in the amount of dialogue each character is saying, like in mm-hmm. even that clip you just played, and some of it works and some of it misses. But it's underwritten in that fact that the story isn't very big. It's extremely – it's contained. It only has – I mean that movie's only got about 30 scenes, maybe tops. Not much really happens. But because of that either earned or unearned twist ending – it makes it so where you at least keep it in your mind and are going back and combing over things more so than I would have just about a regular run-of-the-mill story about a babysitter and a woman and their shenanigans.
And I'm going to disagree with that, and I'm going to tell you, young adult, obviously.
Which is
Labor Day up in the air. These movies didn't have twist endings. They were just regular run-of-the-mill movies, you know, Men, Women, and Children. Yeah. These other movies that he's done are fantastic and way better, heads and shoulders above, totally. You know, and they didn't resort to some ridiculous nonsense. They were upfront about what they were about. They were smartly written, right? Thematically, they worked. This movie, I couldn't even tell you the theme through half of it.
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
Just makes no sense.
Yeah, I couldn't either. I was grasping for theme on this, and I found a couple of very cliched ones, but I wasn't happy with that. So you're not recommending this then?
I wouldn't, because I don't think it's worth watching.
Yeah, I would recommend that you go back and look at the other films that Trevor just mentioned by these collaborators, like Young Adult and Labor Day, Up in the Air especially. Those are very fine examples of a good Jason Reitman film, good Diablo Cody film, and a good Charlize Theron film. This is a movie that is going to, for those that see it, you're either really going to go with this or you're at some point going to say, you know, throw your hands up and say,
I think this will be a fairly lost one, don't you? This will be one that even people who are Reitman fans kind of forget about.
I'm surprised it's being released on 1,200 screens this weekend. That's a moderate release for this. I mean, and I think it's due to the fact that it has a trailer that is portraying this as a straightforward kind of, not romantic comedy, but you know what I mean? Kind of just a off the wall
and probably
serial drama comedy.
Past performances of things like Young Adult, right? You have to think would give them would allow them to take a bigger shot on this, because you really
Young
would think this would be 600
though.
Or less.
Young Adults had balls in the sense that was a mm-hmm. movie that was just dark, mean, dark, and darkly funny. That was a good black comedy. That really was a dark comedy. Good movie. All right, let's move on and talk about the week of.
Well, we should be there in 45 minutes to an hour 30, so. And also, I would crank up the AC. You just give me a nod. That was a nod.
That was an AC nod.
Or was the AC nod? I thought you were not. All right, let's see how the window goes for a bit, and then we'll get the AC going.
It's really hot in here.
It's getting there, right?
All right, this is Netflix's and Adam Sandler's fourth collaboration together after Ridiculous 6, Do-Over, and Sandy Wexler. And I think it's my favorite that he's done for the streaming service. I really liked Sandy Wexler. I know people, you specifically hated that movie. I thought that was kind of a nice homage to some Woody Allen stuff and a love letter to his real-life manager. But this is really the more streamlined Sandler. Even though he's playing the meek character that I don't particularly like when he plays, I like him more aggressive in the Happy Gilmore, Billy Madison style. But he can't go on doing that forever. So I appreciate what he's doing here. Doesn't have a whole lot of support. Chris Rock is fairly wasted in this movie in a lot of sense. He's not given an opportunity to be funny. He's kind of the drag on the story. He's working against the story a lot of the time. But there are some amusing bits in here. I like that the troupe of Sandler regulars, Buscemi, and all those guys are in here. But kind of a mediocre effort, right? So I'd say a little bit above mediocre, but better than what was playing in the theater this weekend. I mean, I could have gone to see I Feel Pretty or Blockers, and I chose to stay and watch this instead. And it's probably better at home. I would have felt bad seeing this in the theater, but I felt right at home looking at this. What'd you think?
Yeah, I agree with everything you say. I think this type of a movie is great for Sandler. He has a sentimentality to do this type of a family wedding. He's giving away his daughter, you know. But again, It feels like every single one of these Netflix movies, if they're not just downright horrible, are just half baked. They're not a complete, they're just not done. They don't seem like they took enough time to write this script out completely, to get every ounce that they could out of this idea and out of the cast, especially the supporting cast. As you said, I mean, Chris Rock is barely in the movie. And when he is, I can't tell if he's not happy or if he just doesn't care. You know, he seems to be upset at times. And then all of a sudden he's okay with this Adam Sandler character, you know, who's, as you say, he's kind of a bumbling, not a very smart guy, obviously very cheap. And, I don't know. If anything, it does feel like it kind of gives up somewhere towards the end there.
Yeah.
Especially when the grandma gives her message. And it's just, of course, Adam Sandler in drag. It almost feels like he really wanted to do that. And they finally get, okay, fine. You can be the grandma here. You know.
Well, some of the bits do land. I think that some of this stuff does work, particularly Rarely. The stuff with Uncle Seymour. I thought the amputee and I having to go to the bathroom.
But it almost takes over the entire movie. I mean, that bit is probably really the strongest story, like through line through the whole movie, right? It shouldn't be, but it is. Like, they take a huge detour with that whole World War II thing.
Oh, I mean, not only that, they also do it with the bats. There's the whole,
right? Like, yeah.
There's a fairly tasteless section where he gets the two guys off the street to come in and join breakfast.
I thought that was funny.
I thought it was funny too, but like it's also these are things that on when they're showing to you on Netflix, Half Baked is a good example of this. It's much like Bright was with Will Smith. It felt first draft.
Doesn't feel finished.
It didn't feel like they took the next step. But maybe that's just what these movies are, and that's why they're on Netflix and studios passed on these concepts and these scripts. But for having it, you know, be available to me free on Friday night and I can watch it, it's a great idea. And I like the fact that these stars, quote unquote movie stars of yesteryear, because it really is now past their prime earning days at the box office, are now going to Netflix because it plays right into our demographic. I will watch the Will Smith movie. I will watch it's only a matter of time before Tom Cruise has a movie on there. And it's just, I will watch these. And if they want to take chances, fine. But then you also have to serve your audience. And I think that they're doing that right now with these movies. And, you know, you get the Brad Pitt one where he does like War Machine, which is kind of an off-ball role for him. But it's, who's to say his, you know, World War Z2 wouldn't come out on Netflix. It's, they're servicing everything. If you can do one for them, one for you in the deal, great. Sandler has four more movies on his contract with them, and I do think they're getting better as they go along. I mean, think about how bad The Ridiculous Six was.
Well, think about how bad Sandler's name would be if he was still releasing things in theaters, right?
Yeah,
he would totally have destroyed his name. So this is a good call to go here where a little bit of a softer audience, you know?
Yeah, especially after kind of – Pixels was the last hurrah in a lot of ways for Sandler's – core
audience. I like Pixels.
I love Pixels. I think
it's tanked terribly. Yeah,
it did better than about what Ghostbusters did. It's kind of like to me the real Ghostbusters.
And you don't see a Ghostbusters sequel either. You know, I mean those True. Aren't great numbers when you really look at things.
I really wish that had done better. I would like to have seen that as a franchise. That'd have been fun.
I would like to have seen Pixels as well. Yeah. Or Ghostbusters, which one are you talking about?
Pixels, not good. The Ghostbusters reincarnation was woeful. Fucking
yeah,
emotional.
I did like Pixels though. I have to agree. I like the Adam Sandler and his troupe, as you say. You know, I like those characters. And I like all the different characters that he plays. And he's got a good, you know, sweet and sour and salty mix to his films. That when you do that just right, you know, and you have things playing off of each other, you know, you get the sweet and the sour in one movie. I like the sentimentality and stuff. It works.
Yeah, it works in a big fashion in his best movies. And there's glimpses of that here. I really liked when him and Rachel Dratcher went upstairs and were screaming at each other.
Yeah,
you know? I thought those scenes really hummed along.
And how the family just kind of went along their business, you know?
Yeah, it is what it was. It started reminding me when his house started piling up with house guests of Madhouse, the old John Larroquette, Christy Alley movie, and Money Pit and things like that. So, but hey, it's a nice, sweet Father of the Bride type story. Yeah. And outside of Chris Rock's overall indifference, it looks like, about being in it, it's a fairly watchable film. So yeah, check that one out. All right, let's do trailers.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
All right, first up we have The Spy Who Dumped Me.
Your boyfriend.
But he dumped me.
Drew was CIA.
I'm sorry, what?
Some bad people are after me. Now they're after you.
Why is this happening?
I don't know, because you dated a spy. I-5, up here.
It's a
new door. It's a
new door. It's a flash drive.
You have to swallow it before they come back.
There is no turning back for us.
We're semi-professionals at this point.
Professional. We are professional. It's a new dawn. It's a new day. It's a new
life. It's a new life for me. Oh my God, I killed someone! I killed someone! Stop yelling them!
I ask a question. If I don't like answer.
I'll tell you anything you want to know.
I've never kept a secret in my life.
Audrey shaves between her boobs.
Morgan flosses with her hair.
She has sex dreams about minions.
Just the one minion with the one eye.
She Googled it on my computer, and now I get a lot of weird ads.
All right, so Audrey and Morgan are best friends who unwillingly become entangled in an international conspiracy when one of the women discovers the boyfriend who dumped her was actually a spy. Starring Mila Kunis and Kate McKinnon. I cannot decide who's the actual star of this movie because I think it's Kate McKinnon, but it does feel like Mila Kunis is getting top billing here. I think Kate McKinnon is going to be the actual star of the movie because she seems funny as hell in this. I laugh every single time with the Google thing and the weird ads coming up. Is that just me? Yeah.
No, crack. Even the shaving between the boobs line is great. Yeah. This is... To me, this looks like the exact kind of movie that you'd see on a hot August afternoon. Do you know what I mean by that? It's like the Hitman's Bodyguard. It's serviceable in that it plays before you. It's going to amuse you. It looks better than something like This Means War or these other, you know, My Super Ex-Girlfriend or these weird kind of high concept dating movies that they've done before. This looks more like a buddy movie. And I like that McKenna's the wisecracking sidekick. She was used to good effect in Ghostbusters, but this might be her bridesmaid moment in the fact that she gets to cut loose here and be the star or the talent that runs away with it without having to shoulder the picture and the plot.
Unfortunately, it's definitely in The Spy Who Dumped Me. So
this is going to be a hit, though. This will be
you
a
think
moneyer.
This will be a hit? Well, a
I do think so.
There's a difference between those two things. I mean, Mila Kunis really doesn't have a huge track record here with movies like this.
I think that this will be a hit for them on the level of something like Central Intelligence.
I'm not so certain.
You're not buying it.
So sold on that this will be that good of a hit.
I think so. I mean, shit, Hitman's we'll Bodyguard see. Made $75 million. This is in that range.
Yes, but this is playing to a different crowd.
I don't know about that. I think
you think this is playing to men who would go see the Hitman's Bodyguard? A hardcore action comedy?
I think a lot of women saw the Hitman's Bodyguard as well that made that a hit. And that is big female audience. You can't underestimate the Ryan Reynolds effect. Fucking Ryan Reynolds.
I can't. Trust me. Yeah. Can you underestimate the Mila Kunis effect, which is not a good one?
I can't. That's for sure. She has a certain effect.
All right.
All right. Moving on, let's talk about Meg.
What you people discovered is bigger than we ever thought possible.
How big is that thing?
It was the largest shark that ever existed.
A living fossil.
Thought to have been extinct for over 2 million years.
Wrong.
Megalodon.
He's kidding, right?
That thing's out there. You need to find it and kill it.
Why don't you just put a tracker on it? Did you guys ever watch Shark Week?
He looks heroic, but he's kind of got a negative attitude.
Chew on this, you ugly.
All right, a deep-sea submersible is trapped when its crew at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean is attacked by a 70-foot-long shark known as the Megalodon. Chinese oceanographer Winston Chow recruits expert deep-sea rescue diver Jonas Taylor, played by Jason Statham, to save the crew from this impending threat. This is based on a novel that was written by Steve Alton back in the 90s. I read the book back then. I thought it was a very unexceptional piece of pop culture that was ultimately forgettable. And this preview makes this movie watchable to me. I kind of want to see this movie. Am I wrong? I mean, I like the ironic use of the music there by the sea, and it looks like a fun summertime movie in the sense of like Lake Placid and Deep Blue Sea and things like that.
Yeah, I really want to watch this. I think this looks absolutely fantastic. It knows that it's ridiculous. I love that there are two movies here. There's a straight action movie starring Jason Statham and a ridiculous comedy starring Rainn Wilson.
Right.
And I love that Rainn Wilson's kind of like the audience watching this straight Jason Statham shark movie and making comments on it and getting no feedback from Statham. It's not even almost as if Statham doesn't even know he exists.
Yeah, it's a great you can tell there's going to be a very knowing, ironic twist in this movie. With those comments you saw there, with that use of music, that there is a certain level of wink-wink going on here.
And fun action.
And a great idea. I mean, this is – I don't know how we haven't gotten – why we haven't gone back to the big – we did the disaster movies for a while. Why aren't we doing the oversized?
Well, they did a Kong movie that I thought was really good. And far as a summer popcorn flick goes, it was really good. So, yeah, I'm down to watch a giant shark movie like that.
This is also being made for the international audience, where Statham is a massive star. Something like The Mechanic 2, which made $20 million here, made $100 million overseas in addition to the movie made here. That's $50 million in China alone. So he's a big name over there. This is being made for a global audience, and I think this is going to be a big hit. And I wouldn't be surprised if we get Meg 2 or The Son of Meg or something like that, you know, Meg's Spawn in the next couple years. And I like that Statham is finally in a legitimate – big budget studio release, right? Well, summertime release.
I do, and I like that they got Mila Kunis to do the voice for the shark. It makes sense.
Oh, Meg. She's so pretty, but so not. All right, what's next?
All right, up next we have Future World.
The world entered a new dark age. I was one of the last synthetics to survive.
Ranger!
You sure this is the place?
Yeah, she's here.
Wake up.
Who are you?
I've been looking for you for a long time.
Show me death.
Mikasa and
Mbappe. Her name's Ash.
She's the perfect woman, right? Incorruptible. God, I love that.
I think I want me a robot.
I
save me.
Maybe I'm malfunctioning. I've never had this feeling before.
It was at that moment I became aware of exactly how different I was.
I had to set things right.
Bring him to me!
You took away the one thing that was mine.
He's mine!
2 guns, 10 bullets. We're gonna need everyone.
You say that like that's a bad thing or something, man. Welcome to paradise.
This isn't paradise.
All right, if you didn't get it from the trailer, this is the movie's about a young boy searching a future world wasteland for a rumored cure for his dying mother. Co-directed by James Franco and Bruce Theory Chung, I'm guessing. It stars James Franco, big surprise, Mila Jovovich, Lucy Liu, and we got Snoop Dogg in here just for good measure, and of course, Suki Waterhouse, who will now be in every post-apocalyptic movie going forward. I think this looks fantastic. I don't know about you. I think it looks super 90s, more 90s than any movie that I've seen in a really long time. This really reminds me of 90s post-apocalyptic nonsense, and it looks like I think it's fun.
Yeah, this looks really good. This reminded me of Albert Payun's Nemesis series and that kind of output there with the cyborg female. Suki Waterhouse, of course, makes you recall The Bad Batch, which in a good hope that this maybe comes close to emulating some sort of the mystique and dread and intensity of that film. It looks like it may contain some of that, but this looks like it has a few more conventional things on its mind as well. I think this looks good, and I think that this is destined for the cult classic bin in a lot of people's libraries. This looks like it could be that kind of film.
What a great title. And what a 90s title. Future World?
I mean, isn't that Michael Crichton's film? Wasn't that the sequel to Westworld? In the films? Yeah, honestly, I think there was a film like that. So
there is a movie called, I don't know, it might be called Future World.
I thought it was Future World. But regardless, Franco is directing this or co-directing it with a cinematographer. So the fact that they went out in the desert and got anything back at all, that it will be watchable. Because his personal directed films outside of The Disaster Artist are very, very hard to watch. Have you watched any of these, like Indubious Battle and things like that?
No, I haven't. Oh. I have not. He's very artistic. He's an artiste.
Yeah, but that technically means sitting in a camera in one spot and letting people act for 7 minutes at a time.
Right, yeah. But this looks to, as we say, this looks to literally react cheap, low-budget 90s post-apocalyptic movies. That looks like exactly what they were going for here, and I think they nailed it. Coming from a background of having watched every single one of those and loving them. I can't wait to see this, especially on the big screen, and it better open up around here.
Oh, I thought this was coming straight to streaming. I would have no intention. I have no idea this was going to come on the big screen. You sure they're going to show this? They're going to project this somewhere?
They're saying end of May. That's what I'm saying. That's what I was hoping it comes around here because, you get a release doesn't necessarily mean it goes anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know about that. All right, let's move on and talk about Denzel Washington's Equalizer 2.
First time to Turkey?
No. Long time ago. Different life.
Now you come back?
Yes. I'm looking for something.
You can find whatever you wish in Turkey.
How about a man who kidnapped a little girl from her American mother?
We'll not be looking for such a man. Will be dangerous for you.
Men like him would think that.
Great, you're helping all these random people and everything. But stay off the radar. Something happened to one of ours. So I'm obligated to look into it.
Thought you were retired.
Oh, I am. Just like your dad.
Yeah. What's the matter?
They knew what floor she was on.
They're tying up loose ends.
Exactly.
He's your partner for 7 years, Mac. It's a mistake to go to war with him.
It's go time. They're going to war with me. It's go time. Whoever did this have off-chart skill sets. Here with the agency. Family. You ever see Star Trek? Very good. Call 911. Go time. They killed my friend. So I'm going to kill each and every one of them. And the only disappointment is that I only get to do it once.
Seeing you carrying all those books around, I figured you for some kind of teacher.
I'm a high-level paid government assassin.
All right, Robert McCall, a former convert. I can't even speak at the end of this podcast. We just did two podcasts in a row. My mouth just decided to shut down. How about we say this? Denzel Washington is back in a sequel to the 2014 hit The Equalizer. The plot you just heard played out in that great trailer that is talking about 90s. That thing threw me back to the 90s. Mm-hmm. Like, look at the professionalism of that, the sleekness of that, how everything is set up, how they give it a sense of importance, and makes you really just want to see it. I mean, I wasn't that interested in the first movie. I thought it was a good little movie. Didn't catch it in the theaters because I didn't think it was worth watching. I didn't think the show was very good when I was a kid. Caught it later, and it became one of my favorite movies of 2014. And this looks equally as good. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I'm more of a fan of these Equalizer remakes than I was of the Mechanic stuff with Jason Statham. And then they're kind of in the same vein, same idea. But here, you know, the first one was really good. I really loved that first Equalizer. This one, I feel like, oh, I'm feeling a little more Man on Fire. I'm feeling a little John Creasy coming through in this performance here. And I mean, does Denzel Washington just badass in general? He just is. I don't know. What can you say other than this looks amazing? It looks great. As far as a little action movie goes, this is what I think The Rock should be doing. Mm-hmm. And I wish that we would get more of these.
Yeah, it looks good. I just worry that this is going to be sandwiched in between. You mentioned The Rock, his Skyscraper, and Mission Impossible 2. Mm-hmm. Mission Impossible, what, 6? The Equalizer 2 and Mission Impossible 6 don't cannibalize each other in the sense that they are kind of going for the same demographic in the sense of age and people that have followed their movie stars for the past 3 decades or so. So they both look fantastic. I mean, all three of those movies I just mentioned actually look very good. And I think that this is going to be, once we get these blockbusters out of the way in May, you're going to have these solid hits by the pros later on in the summer.
Well, I'm excited to see Antoine Fuqua come back and just do normal action again, you know, and I think that I would love to see more of him just doing smaller little action movies like this.
He says it with such apparent ease. It doesn't seem like it's very hard for him to do these. He gets all the angles right. He's an extremely visually accomplished filmmaker on the level of like something like Michael Bay, you know, Tony Scott, these people that
Donner, know where to all place these guys.
You guys know how to place their camera, you know. Just he does these very – and they're extremely just slick. And he's good. I mean, I hated that he was wasting – his time doing some shitty movies there for a while. And I'm glad that he's back on. I mean, he didn't need to make Bait. You know, like, what are you doing there? I understand why he made The Replacement Killers, but it is what it is.
Right.
This looks fantastic. All right, guys, that's going to wrap up episode 336. We want to thank you all for joining us on this podcast. As always, you can listen to our back catalog on moviemavericks.com or wherever you may be getting these podcasts from. Just a reminder to rate us on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, wherever you may be getting these downloads at, go ahead and rate and review the show. It helps us get the word out on the podcast. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com/warp9. Engage!